What's up, my friends? It's Rick Mulready here. Listen, if you are feeling like you're struggling to keep up with all the AI opportunities, or maybe you're wondering how to even start leveraging AI in your business without all the headaches, the AIify newsletter is designed with you in mind, my friend. Every week, I simplify AI for you, showing you how to apply it and integrate it into your business so that you can work less and profit more. As one of my readers put it, it's a must-have for any entrepreneur who wants to get more done in less time. And they said there's a lot of noise out there and your information is up to date, yet just feels more calm and more relatable. So I want to invite you to sign up for the AIify newsletter. It's free. Just go to rickmulready.com/newsletter. That's rickmulready.com/newsletter.
So welcome to the episode, and you're hearing this on a Monday because Monday is the new series, could be the best segment out of the other two, well, three now, that I have on this podcast. And so let me explain. I have here John Mendez, AI optimization coach. And what we're doing here on Mondays is, you know how back in the old day before the internet, when you wanted to like learn from somebody, see if they're worth doing business with. Even nowadays, you know, you go and grab a cup of coffee and sit down at Starbucks or whatever other second-rate coffee brand you believe in. Just kind of, not really. Well, we're sitting down and you're going to get to know John before you hear his next episode, which will air in another week or two. And it's tentatively titled, what are we titling it, John?
Let's title it this: how to not get replaced by AI, even if you're technologically inclined.
How to not get replaced by AI, even if you're say that word for me because I can't even say it right now.
Even if you're technologically inclined. So it doesn't matter if you have zero tech experience, it doesn't matter if you're a dinosaur, it doesn't matter if you never even have, it doesn't matter if you don't even have a router in your house. I'm going to teach you the game plan, the step-by-step, so you'll never get replaced.
Two words that I'm thinking of, which is really why I was excited to have you on that next episode. When you say prompt engineering, yeah. I was like, this is what the listener really wants to hear about, because as online business owners, you know, I've heard of ChatGPT, I've heard of Gemini, I haven't heard enough since I'm struggling so hard to pull out these names. Bard, what's the other one?
Claude,
yes. But the quality really is in the prompts, and it really is in engineering your prompt. Let's call it setting up your prompt for AI success. And so I can't wait to share that episode with the listeners of this podcast. But right now, we just want to get to know you. And you know what was really intriguing me as we were talking before we hit record, John? You love speaking in person. And I've been to your Instagram and I met you at an in-person event, but you really do speak a lot. You're going on tour and you're speaking in a lot of places. Tell me first, like when you do speak in front of audiences, what kind of audience do you speak to usually?
Yeah, so primarily, it's always started as real estate agents, and I can get to the backstory as to why. I'm sure we'll cover it later, but the quick 20-second backstory is I got licensed as a real estate agent, and I got asked to teach a class, and from there, majority of my audience was real estate agents just because I was in that industry. I was an agent myself, and so most of these speaking engagements have been for people in the real estate industry, for mostly agents and brokers. It's starting to expand a little bit to more so like real estate professionals, so now like lenders, attorneys, you know, all those other adjacent businesses in the real estate profession, right? And then from there, once I got more into the course creation business and the entrepreneur world, not saying that a lot of real estate agents are just glorified like employees, because they're not really treating their business as like an entrepreneur, as a business owner. They're just people who have a business, but they're really just employees, and they run, a lot of them run their business that way. Which is why the failure rate for most agents is extremely high. But as I said, so as I started teaching, learning more about course creation, I started joining business masterminds, stopped going to real estate mastermind and real estate events. Now my audience is starting to open up to business owners from other industries as well. Still primarily like 70 to 80% of my audience is real estate agents and real estate professionals, but it's starting to broaden a little bit.
Even though you teach about how to use AI, you also have another topic that you love to talk about. What's that?
So, man, you can't ask someone that likes to talk about everything like this on the spot, because I like to talk about a lot of things. So, I mean, entrepreneurship, podcasting, personal finance, you name it. What else? I could talk about nutrition for a little bit. I could talk about anime, video games. There's a lot of things. I feel like this is a trick question.
Okay, fine. Since we're just getting to know you, I will tee up an anime topic. Because my daughter was asking, she comes home one day and somehow she is now fixated on learning Japanese. Not only learning Japanese, but she's like, I wish I was born in Japan. I wish I was born in Japan. My wife and I are like, why? So disclaimer, if you're like a sophisticated adult and you're listening to this, you might say, oh, that's racist. You can't say stuff like that. This came out of the mouth of my daughter. And I'm simply telling you what she said, because she has two Japanese friends who are in a ballet class with her. And she's like, I just want my eyes to be like that. And she goes like this. And I'm like, okay, we're going to have an education moment in a moment. But with little kids, you got to keep asking questions, you know? And so I'm like, so cool, tell me more, whatever I said. You know, I put on like my fake parent smile, like there could be something here that needs to be corrected probably, but I'm going to see what's going on in your 7-year-old mind before I tell you what kind of things are good and not good to just do and say, right? And so then she's telling me about how she just, it's her two friends and she just really likes them and loves them and always wants to see them. And so I'm like, okay, cool. And so she wants to learn Japanese and we're having this talk as we're walking to the OXXO, which is like a 7-Eleven here in Mexico where I live. And she's explaining to me how she really wants to learn Japanese. I'm like, oh, do you? Well, I love languages. Let's bond over this. And so I tell her about those Miyazaki films. I think it's the Studio Ghibli is the studio that produces them, but they're like cartoon films like My Neighbor Totoro and or Totaro or Kiki's something delivery service or Princess Mononoke. Have you ever heard of those?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so maybe you should watch them too. But I was watching them with my daughter and she enjoys them. They're just kind of like they're Japanese animated movies. So since you like anime, what's your favorite anime?
I'd say if I had to choose, I mean, first of all, I probably haven't heard of those animes because, you know, I only watch good anime. You know, that's probably why. No, I'm joking. But all seriousness, I would say the anime that I like the most overall probably is, and not to be like a bandwagon or, you know, but like Naruto. It's just like all the lessons in Naruto. The only thing that sucks about it is that all the filler episodes are absolutely annoying. Aside from that, I do not endorse Boruto at all. I think it's, honestly, they've ruined the storyline. It kind of sucked for me personally. That's like Naruto's son. And so they made a whole series, spinoff series off of him and his son and his journey. But honestly, I stopped watching it. Couldn't stand to watch it. But honestly, I like Naruto. And part of the big reason why I liked anime is because there's a lot of Eastern philosophy like embedded throughout a lot of anime. And for me, like being a kid, like, you get to see a lot of that and it opens your perspective. Of course, there's like a ton of action and fighting and all that stuff going on, but there's also a lot of Eastern philosophy that's kind of embedded throughout. And as you get deeper into like some of like the meanings behind and the symbolism in a lot of the anime, it can get very deep very quickly for some of these shows. And so it's like, I really love anime for that. And also like, I don't watch normal television here. In the States, I actually sold my TV, so I don't watch TV at all anymore.
I don't have a TV either.
Years ago. I like that. So if I watch something every now and then, me and my girl will watch something on Netflix. I watch one show. It's called The Challenge. That's like our routine. But aside from that, I only watch anime. And I still watch. I'm currently watching like 5 or so animes right now. I've been watching animes for as long as I remember, and probably will watch it till, you know, as long as I'm here.
Of course, me being me, like if you say anime, I'm thinking only of Dragon Ball Z, and into that, there pretty much is no other. So,
Dragon Ball Z is one of those animes where it's like, as you become an experienced, as a sophisticated anime watcher, Oh, right? Geez. You used the word sophisticated earlier. As you become a sophisticated anime watcher, you
watch out now.
How much Dragon Ball Z, like, it's iconic because, like, what it did for the anime culture here, like, it really put on, like, the anime scene. Like,
sure,
that show did numbers. But, sure, like, as you get older, you realize how awful the storyline actually is. It's so predictable. It's literally fight, get beat up, random power up, then you beat the guy, and then rinse, wash, repeat. Yep. And then, like, after a while, it just gets so repetitive. And then you have Dragon Ball Super, and, like, one of the first big villains is Goku Black, which is, like, how creative. You take the main character and
true,
just
very true,
change his outfit, and now he's the main villain for a whole arc. That was probably, right, like, the least creative thing I've seen in anime history. So I stopped watching Dragon Ball Super. But when I was younger...
Say no more. You're not a Dragon Ball Z fan. That's okay.
No, I loved it when I was younger. I had all the Dragon Ball Z games, like Budokai Tenkaichi 2, 3, and 1 on PlayStation 2 and PlayStation 1. Like, okay. I had all the Dragon Ball Z games growing up. I didn't have them. My friends did, and I would always play them. But as I said, once you start watching the other anime, and you start really seeing, like, good storylines. I still love Dragon Ball Z for what it was. Action. That's all it was. It's straight hands. Yeah. People were blasting each other. Planets are destroying. Like, that's what we all went there. We never went to go to Dragon Ball Z to see, you know, a well-scripted storyline, right? We just went over there to see people box. That's it. We just seen people pretty boxing. Much. That's all we was there for.
Pretty much. I was just recording another podcast episode earlier, and the guy was sharing about how this other lady just got done recording. She's going to be on the upcoming season of Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to have her on the podcast if she's willing, but to explain how, as an online business owner, how you can get your online business set up so that you can take 3 months off to film Survivor and, like, your business still runs and grows. And I was quite impressed with that. I feel like many people would love to be there, you know? Where'd you get started with your online business? Because you said you spoke mainly to real estate agents.
Yeah.
And I know you said there was a story there. So, like, how did you end up teaching people how to use AI?
Yeah, so I take you back in the time machine, or should I just give you the quick and dirty example?
Take us back in the time machine. We got a little bit.
So I would say I was never the traditional entrepreneur. I didn't have the lemonade stand. I didn't have the paper route. Wasn't selling candy bars at school. I had friends who sold, like, sneakers, and sometimes they'll go into, like, a sneaker convention with, like, 3 pairs of sneakers and come out with, like, 6, 7, 8. Sometimes I come out with, like, a whole wagon full of, like, sneaker boxes. And so I had entrepreneurs around me that were my friends, but even my family, there wasn't any entrepreneurs. Everyone just worked until they died. And my grandpa, I used to tease him a little bit. And especially when I worked at the restaurant job, I used to say, like, hey, another day, I'm going to go trabajar como los burros, right? To work like a donkey, pretty much. Gotcha. And that's how my family knew. Let's work until you die. Just work, work, work. That's pretty much it. I wasn't surrounded by people who were financially literate or financially savvy at all, or investing. Like, all this stuff that we're talking about now was very foreign to me, almost non-existent. And so growing up, for me, one thing, growing up in the projects, like, we had Section 8, we had food stamps, and I usually don't stick, you know, mention those all that much because, yeah, like, life was hard. But for me, I was a kid. And when you're a kid, it just is. Like, I wasn't thinking, like, as an 8th grader, 9-year-old, like, hey, I have Section 8. Like, my life must be so awful. Like, no, I'm just a kid. Like, I wasn't worried about a lot of that stuff. And that's also part of the reason why I hate victim mentality so much. It's like, yeah, I had it hard, but I didn't even realize I had it hard until, like, I grew up. And it's like, oh, well, I did miss out on some opportunities, but who cares? Like, I learned early on, like, I wanted to be a product of my decisions and not a product of my environment. And I can't say where that stemmed from. But I always, like, I took people at face value, and it's like the stuff that they did that I liked, I try to implement into my life, and the stuff that they didn't like, I would leave out. And so for me, that's how I navigated my way around the world. I was always very open-minded, and that's why, like, I think I gave a lot of perspective very early on. What's going on?
No, I'm just hearing what you're saying.
Yeah.
You had that perspective from the get-go or somewhere?
When I'm very young.
You picked that up, or
earlier than that, earlier, probably like elementary, middle school, I started picking up like that. And I think for me, like, I think I was blessed with the gift of wisdom, We all, mm-hmm. God blesses us all with gifts, I feel. And the mm-hmm. one for me was wisdom. And most of it was because I was just so open-minded. Like not having a set role model to look up to. It's like, that was my biggest blessing. Because I said I had the opportunity to look at all these people and see what they were doing and what they weren't doing. And just became like this giant melting pot of all these different viewpoints and perspectives. And then the parts that I did, like, I would try to adopt into my life. The parts I didn't, I would leave out. And so that's how I navigated the world. And I still remember, like, in middle school and high school, we have this thing called, like, philosophical chairs or Socratic seminars. I forget what they're called. And they'd be like, what's the best thing, pizza or ice cream? Pick a side. And you had to split the class up. And like, I would see which side had less people, right? Yeah. And pretty much. And I would just go on a side with less people just so I can argue and have more people to argue with. Like, I love debating. Wow. And even in like middle school, I realized, like, I love argumentative essays. I love debating a point for whatever reason. And just switching our perspective. And that carried on. And then I got into high school, student athlete, right? Played sports. My senior,
I don't know. What sports did you play?
Football and basketball. And then I did track my senior year. I did javelin. Sports. Yeah. The good sports. Yeah. So I played
football. I say football. That as a swimmer. Like, so people made fun of me. And at many times I wish I had done a quote unquote good, or let's call it stereotypical sport. So you're listening to this podcast right now. You should head over to the YouTube channel and watch it, because then you would see that John, the guest, heritage-wise, is, well, tell me, you said your dad was from the Dominican Republic and your mom was from Honduras? Where?
So, it's actually, my mom was from DR, Dominican Republic, okay. And my dad was Guatemalan. But my mom's side of the family raised me. No worries. Yeah. My mom's side of the family raised me. So, okay. Whenever someone asks, I always claim my Dominican side first, just because, like, that culturally, that's what I was brought up into. I didn't really know anything about my Guatemalan culture until this past December when I went to Guatemala for the first time ever.
Okay.
Aside from that, my dad was absent pretty much most of my childhood. So I never really seen him. And I have cousins here and family here from my Guatemalan side that I still have yet to meet. And then my mom's side of the family, my mom, she suffered from mental health issues. So, like, for me personally, we still have a horrible relationship. And, like, it's one of those things where I didn't realize as a kid, like, why she couldn't be the mom I needed her to be.
Right.
And then as I got older, I realized it's because she couldn't due to, like, her condition. But then, like, even now, it's like she still thinks she's my mom. And in my head, that ship has sailed. So mm-hmm. for me, my grandparents are the ones who raised me. They're my parents in my head. And that's, for me, as I said, was also another big blessing, because I think one of the biggest things about my upbringing that I loved is that my grandparents didn't try to shelter me off from anything. Like, no. They were very chill. I had some chill grandparents. But also, like, I grew up in the projects. So it's like all the drugs, all the gang activity, all that stuff was always around me. It was always right nearby. And I never, ever dabbled with it. I knew that wasn't around, especially once I started going to church. I started going to church around, like, third grade. So that had a big factor to play into it.
Okay.
And so that helped start building the right foundation, the right morals. But, like, for me, it's like it was always there. But because, I know, we want things that we can't have. But no one ever told me that I couldn't go down that route. I mean, I always could have. It was right there. But I just chose not to. And it reminds me of this quote that Jordan Peterson talks about, this subject. And it's like, the rabbit who does no harm to you isn't actually virtuous. Because even if it wanted to, it couldn't. Right? It's the lion that could kill you that chooses not to, that displays true virtue. And so for me, it's like a lot of people say, you know, oh, I haven't done this, this, and that. I haven't ever drank in my life or did this. And it's like, well, where was the temptation? And one of the points I always bring up is, like, is a man loyal if he doesn't cheat on his wife, but he never had the opportunity to cheat? And it's a question that usually gets people. It's usually a 50-50 response that I get from most people when I ask that and bring that question up. It's like, oh, you know, he never cheated, so it doesn't matter if he had options or not. He's loyal. He never cheated. But then, like, it's like, if you never had the temptation, if you have never had the opportunity to cheat, are they not cheating because they don't want to cheat? Or are they not cheating because the opportunity never presented itself? And that's something that a lot
of people matter.
Yes,
100%. Okay,
why 100%? Because it's like you never truly know. It's it was back to that Mike Tyson quote, right? Everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face, right?
Okay. All right.
And so it's like, you could say, oh, I never cheated my wife. Oh, I never did. And it's like, okay, but have you ever had the opportunity to do so? And if you haven't, then you can really, you can't really say. Like, if, for example, let's bring it to online business. Yeah, my course helps people make thousands of dollars. Okay, but do you have anyone that's been through your course? No, but if someone did go through my course, it would make them millions of dollars. Oh, well, that's not enough of a testimonial for me to buy your program. I think you're BSing me.
It's the same. I don't know. That's a stretch. I would beg to differ politely.
So state your point. But so to keep on, so, but to keep it to the thing what we're talking about, it's like, is a man loyal if he doesn't cheat but never had the option to do so?
He is loyal, but maybe the proof of like his loyalty hasn't been tested. But like, by the definition of loyal, he's still loyal if he hasn't cheated or not, whether or not like he had the opportunity to cheat. Like, if we're just going like by the definition of being loyal, then yeah, he's loyal. Now, in his heart, like, is he like, has he been tested and can say that like he's loyal because he made the decision like in the face of temptation to be loyal? Like, he can't say that, but he can still say that like he's not actively going out there and looking for opportunities to cheat, you know? Like,
remember, in this situation, is if he didn't never had an opportunity, he's not loyal or not loyal. He just, there just isn't anything. He's not anything in that. If he never had the opportunity to cheat, he's not anything. And he's not loyal or not loyal. He's just not anything. If you had the opportunity to cheat, and then based on what you decide to do, only then could you be labeled as loyal or not. Is kind of what the thing kind of stems to. And to like tie it back to what the original point, it's like a lot of people say that, oh, they're this and this and that, but it's like, if you never had any adversity, if you never had any temptations, right, it's easy to live a clean life, right? If there's nothing that you've never been tested, it's easy to say that you're this, this, and that if you've never been tested, right?
Okay, I'll give you that.
That's kind of like the where the point stems to. And so for me, I don't even remember where I was originally going with that point. I think I was talking about like,
it's okay. We're just talking.
Yeah.
But I have a question for you.
Yeah.
You were talking about growing up in the projects. Oh, this is where you're going. And you were saying that though, let's just everything, you know, call it the lifestyle, call it gangs, call it drugs, were around you, you never really wanted that. I was going to ask, and I think that's where we were talking about men and being loyal. And are you loyal if you haven't been tempted? I was going to ask you, do you feel, since you said you're, mom was from the Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
I can't get this right. No?
Yeah.
Okay. So your mom actually immigrated to the States from the Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
All right. I can identify with that because I also grew up in the hood and my dad is from Ghana, though my mom is from the States. And so I wondered, how much do you feel like an international mindset had to do with the fact that you clearly we're not a product of your environment?
I mean, the Dominican lifestyle, the Dominican culture is very, I mean, a lot of the time they start drinking very early. I never had my first drink until I was 19, which is still technically underage. But like, let's be real, most people do drink underage. And like in my culture, culturally, most people drink. And people will look at it through their, you know, United States lens and realize that cultures outside of the States are extremely different from this country that we're living in and like how they're brought up. But it was one of those things where, like, culturally that was accepted to, like, from a young age to start drinking. That's like one of the things, like, for me, I never wanted to do that. I never found any interest in doing so. And so there are things like that. It's like also like the Dominican culture as a whole tends to be very, very promiscuous. Like for me growing up in the church, I always thought that that was the wrong thing to do. So it's something I never dabbled in. And so it's like, for me, as I said, I took the parts that I liked and left out the parts that I didn't. And so I think, I mean, I love the culture. I love my Dominican culture a lot more than my Guatemalan side. But that's a story for another day, you know. a little biased. But it gave me a lot of charisma. It gave me a lot of my personality, my flair, right, of who I am and how I express myself. And so it's like, it's all about, like, deciding how you want to live. Mm-hmm. And being comfortable in that. And I feel like, as I said, having that international mindset, I always brought up that I don't remember too much of like the anecdotes or the lesson that my grandparents tried to instill in me. But one of the ones I always learned is that I actually wasn't too helpful, honestly. But it was like always, you know, when you go to someone's house, don't ask for anything. If they offer, say no, right? Right. Don't take anything from anyone. Always behave yourself. My grandparents always told me not to get involved in that stuff. Like they always frowned upon it. And so that may have played a role as well. They always frowned upon like, hey, don't, you know, don't hang out with like bad company. It reminded me of a Bible verse that I love. It's like, do not be misled. Bad company corrupts good character. I think I quoted it last week too. It's one of my favorite Bible verses.
Okay. For context, somebody's listening. Last week we recorded an episode on his podcast.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think things that I definitely had a lot of play. Some of it was very helpful. Some of it I had to, you know, unpack and unravel so I could put in, because a lot of it is limiting beliefs. Like they don't come from money. For them, they thought the pinnacle of success was getting a degree. I dropped out of college. They were very against it. Had I not done that, we wouldn't be even sitting here having this episode right now. Right. Yeah. And so it's like, there's pros and cons to like having that immigrant mindset. Like one of the best things, like they instilled like work ethic, right? Because they know, especially like growing up, my grandparents didn't receive their citizenship until like I was in my teenage years, right? Oh. And so like for them, it's like they always like they never want to stay in trouble, like get in trouble. They don't want to make too much commotion. They don't want to make too much of a loud, you know. Yeah. Any noise or anything, because it's like they knew their place, kind of, and sure. They didn't want to get kicked out. They didn't want to get sent back. They knew the opportunity was here, and it takes a lot of like courage to like drop everything and come here. And they didn't have much, and like my grandparents, like they already raised their kids, and now they have to raise me and my sister. Like they already did their job, but then they then had to raise me. It definitely instilled a lot of strong character traits in me, and yeah. That are still helping me out to this day.
I can relate on many levels. I don't even think we got to talk about this during the last time we were at recording an episode for your podcast, but because my dad immigrated from Ghana, I, for the longest, didn't understand what that meant and like what he had to give up, because he did leave quite a bit when he immigrated from Ghana to the States. You know, like he had 2 degrees. He was already working like a government job, which in plenty of countries, like, you have a decent government job, it's, you know, you just stay there and you just stay on a decent salary and then a nice pension. You know, it's not a job that you just up and leave. And yet he did. But like you talk about like the immigrant work ethic and hustle, like for most of my life, I didn't see him just because he was there, but he was working 2 jobs to afford to take care of like my sister and I. And then like, him and my mom got divorced too. So, or like after probably age 9, he wasn't there either. But like, I can understand that and identify, like you, when you said you grew up in the projects, but you're a kid. So it's not like you really know where you're at or know that like maybe the cards that you have aren't the same as somebody else. Like, you know, you're just a kid. You're just happy. You're enjoying your life. And like, that was me too. But I didn't know it was weird to not be able to cross the street, but I couldn't cross the street, you know, like I didn't get it until I did that. You shouldn't like squirt guns at cars that are passing by until a car like pulled up and like I had to run for it. You know, so intriguing.
It's one of those things I feel like here in the States, it's kind of, I feel like mainstream society tries to force victim mentality BS down your throat and try to make you accept and adopt that mindset, whether you want to or not. And like, for me, it's like, oh, you know, you hear like, oh, but John, you know, you're like, you're a person of color. Like you have it harder. Like there's people who have more opportunities than you. And like, you know, you grew up in the projects, you had free lunch. Like, and it's like, and so what? I'm supposed to sit here and cry about it. I'm a grown man. Like I'm gonna make the life that I want for myself. I'm not. Yes, that is true. Yeah. Yes. I had all those experiences. And that's not to belittle any of those experiences. Well, those are my experiences. I lived them. Yes, it was hard. Yes, you know, we had to boil cold water sometime just to take baths. Like, it was definitely not easy. But there's a quote I love. It's like, one can't wish for both strong character and an easy life, because the price of one is the other. Right?
There you go. Yeah.
And so it's like all these people say like, oh, especially that it gets me so annoyed when successful people are like, you know, I pray that no one has to go through what I went through. And my first thought is always, but like you went through it and you came out pretty well. So are you saying that you don't want people to be as successful as you? I mean, of course, yeah, not everyone makes it. But if everyone went through the same exact situations as you did, in the same exact circumstance, with the same exact mindset and resources, all variables held the same, more in most cases, another you would come out. And so what you're telling me is that you don't want another you. So that, is that because like you're trying to sit on this moral high ground? Like, oh my goodness, I don't want you guys to have it as hard as I did. I don't know what the, for me, and this just may be me being a little cynical or skeptical, but it's like, well, I had it pretty tough. I think more people should experience what I went through. Build some character, right? Build some thick skin.
So what you're saying is it made you who you are today, and you have no regrets nor wish, like, I guess we can't say like I have no regrets. It's like how we grew up, you know. But
yeah,
what you mean is like you don't wish that it was any different. Like you're thankful for your roots, for your upbringing. Yeah.
Drake once said, sometimes I wish I could go back in life, not to change anything, just to feel a couple things twice. That's one of my quotes that I love, where everyone says like, oh, what would you tell your younger self? And it's like, for me, one, my younger self is me right now. So it's like, how much younger do you want me to go? Right. But then two is also, it's like, I wouldn't change anything. Right. Why? One, if you watch anything like movie, all those time traveler movies, one, you know about the like the butterfly effect. And if you change one thing, it's going to change a whole. Like,
not good to change stuff in the past.
Yeah, no, exactly. I watched too many, you know, time traveling movies to know how that ends up. Right. And two, I said, I think I turned out pretty fine. And some may say I turned out great for my age. So it's like, if this was the price that I have to pay to achieve the success that I want to achieve, so be it.
Okay. All right. Though there are two kinds of time travel. One where the past affects the future, and the other where the past just branches off into another future and doesn't affect the future that you're from, because even if you go to the past, you're still in the future. You're not actually in the past of your original self. If that makes sense.
Nope, it doesn't, but we're going to keep it going.
Does it? All right. I was talking to a guy today who tried to break down time travel according to two different branches of like Hollywood. And he was explaining to me that, and maybe I didn't do it justice, but what he was, you can go in the past and you're truly in the past, in which case you make decisions that, you know, if you mess up too many things or if you change too many things in the past, then you might change yourself out of existence because you came from the future. Tracking with me? And yep. Then he was saying that's one thought, but like another school of thought says, if we're going across this timeline and I jump to the past, I'm still the future of like my past self, and the past I jumped to was like a different past that is still the future. So if I change stuff, it doesn't change that original timeline.
Different timeline.
Past self was on because I'm still in the future.
Yeah,
but it's future past. I don't know. So fast forward us, because we still are staying on track. You did say that you speak primarily to real estate agents. And I know you told me when we recorded on your podcast about this, but your entrepreneurial journey didn't start with AI. And I don't even, did it start with real estate, or did you have something before that?
Well, it kind of did. So fast forward a story, right? I got into college, got into 13 colleges, right? Ended up going to University of Connecticut. Got into quite a bit. I skipped a lot in school, but I made sure I did my homework and I got great SAT scores. So I graduated with a 3.5 and got into
13.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just thinking college admission fees. I didn't have enough money to even apply to 7.
That's the beauty of having free lunch, man. Yeah, got the free admission fees, man. I got that all waived off. I was sending out.
I must need to have met your counselor, because I had free lunch all my years growing up, but I still had to pay for college applications. Well, why do you have to apply to college anyway? Let's not.
That's not another rabbit hole. Right? And so I knew college was a scam going into it, but I didn't know any other vehicles or any other routes to go down. So I just went to college anyways, went to UConn, had a great time when I was up there, in a bunch of clubs, a bunch of organizations, got heavily involved in almost everything. 3-7-8, like honor society. I was having a blast. All right. End of my freshman year, pandemic happens. Boom, March 2020. never end up coming back on campus. Then fall 2020, I ended up starting my sophomore semester and I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And from there, it made me realize that there was another way of viewing the world that wasn't being taught in school, wasn't being taught in my environment, but more importantly, like, wasn't being taught back home, right? So what I did was I went on YouTube University and looked up every video I can about anything related to like personal finance, entrepreneurship, you name it. And I ended up stumbling across this course on real estate wholesaling, which essentially kind of like, let's say you want to buy a property, right?
Yeah.
And there's Joe Schmo who wants to sell a property. Like now with an agent, you'll list a property and then the buyer will have an agent to represent them and the buyer, you know, they close on the house, whatever. But like a wholesaling is a little different. Usually wholesaling is off market, mainly because the sellers are in some sort of like distress situation. And it's like, all right, I'll get the seller. I'll connect them to you, the buyer. And then I'll get a sort of like finder's fee of some sort for connecting you two. And so that's essentially what wholesaling is for anyone that's listening. And I was going to do that, got my LLC filed, got my logo name and all that stuff. And I was going to start wholesaling, and an attorney in Connecticut was like, oh, you can't do that. And I thought they were the professionals. You can. That's the first thing I learned is you can. But at the time, they were the professionals. They were the attorneys, right? And so I was like, well, but I don't want to be in trouble with the law. So let me just drop this idea. From there, I ended up starting my spring semester of sophomore year, still online. And I ended up deciding to start my real estate university classes to get my real estate license because I was at K Jewelers and I was helping people buy like all these jewelry and all these engagement rings and stuff. And I was like, well, if I can help them with this and I'm making some money off of it, imagine I help somebody with a house, how much better I would feel, how much better they would feel. Because people would come in and buy like a $100 ring and like act like they just won the Super Bowl. Like they were super excited. So like imagine a house. So I was just like, all right.
Well, these are significant milestones, like a ring or engagement and a house. Just it's a significant American milestone. All right.
Exactly. And so I was like, all right, now imagine that. Now a house, it's like 100, 1,000 times more. Right. So I was like, sign up from real estate university, stop showing up to all my college classes online, and just went all into there. So I was working about 70 hours between K Jewelers and I started at a restaurant. And at the whenever I had free time, I would pretty much study for my real estate exam. And so for about like 6-7 months in 2021, it was just like every day was like Groundhog's Day. It was just like the same day, rinse, wash, repeat for forever. I barely remember like that whole first half of 2021. And so from there, I ended up getting licensed 2 weeks after I turned 20 as an agent, September like 15th or so or something like that. I got licensed as an agent around that time. Right. Me and one of my boys were talking about a month before. He was like, yo, bro, we should start a podcast. And I'm like, yo, bro, I'm not going to lie. That's a good idea. And he ended up going back to college. I had already dropped out to pursue real estate. So our schedules didn't match up anymore.
Okay.
And from there, I procrastinated. I was thinking of a name. I couldn't think of any. And it took me about 3 months, but I finally came up with the name Walk to Wealth. And the whole story behind the name is for the 99% of us that aren't overnight sensations. It's a long walk to wealth. And some people may walk faster than others, but what good is sprinting to the finish line if you've passed out when you cross it? And so that's how the podcast came together. And so January of 2022, I launched the podcast.
Okay.
I ended up quitting K Jewelers a couple months before that. So I was just working at the restaurant, got my real estate license, launched the podcast January 2022. I was in a couple of real estate calls in January. And it usually took place from between 6:30 to 7 in the morning. Now, I'm normally in the gym at that time, so I normally never share. And one day, they were talking about social media. And I was like, oh, my time to shine.
Right.
So I ended up not being able to share because I was in the gym. So I just typed up what I wanted to say and posted it in the Facebook group. And I had tons of people like loving, commenting, sharing the post. And one of the co-hosts was like, John, will you mind teaching a class on this? And instead of saying, yeah, I said, I never taught a class before. And she was like, John, listen, let me know when you want this scheduled. So I couldn't say no to her twice. I couldn't fumble this opportunity twice. So what I did was I just figured it out. Right? I had a Google form, and from the Google form went to the Google Sheet. And then I would copy and paste those names onto a MailChimp. And then from the MailChimp, send out the Zoom link to people. because I didn't know how to use Eventbrite. I didn't know about funnels or Kajabi or any of the
automation, none of that.
Pages. I ain't know about any of that stuff, man. I was duct taping everything, putting it together. Oh, man. Okay. And I ended up getting for that first class. I taught it. So Keller Williams in February normally does a big real estate conference called Family Reunion. Now, 2022 was going to be the first family reunion in a few years because of the pandemic. I was going to family reunion, and I knew I was going to see all the people in the class at family reunion. So the Friday before, I hosted my very first social media class, right? I ended up getting over 440 people registered for that class. Then from there, that following Friday, I went to family reunion, and at family reunion, I seen all the people. Everyone knows me by my hair. And I had a lot more hair. If you see my headshot, I had a lot more hair before I cut it. And so,
oh really?
Yeah, I had. Check for anyone that's watching. Like, look for my headshot. Right, and my hair used to be massive, and I went in with my hair in cornrows because I knew everyone was gonna expect the hair. Right, gotcha. So I came. You can never let them know your next move. Right, keep them on their toes always. That Sunday at the conference, there was going to be a networking event for the people in that community. So that Sunday, I woke up extra early at the conference, washed my hair, had my curls in full effect, and I had a shirt that says, "Stop and stare, just don't touch the hair."
Nice.
And that
that's why your email is "Stop and Stare."
Exactly. And that's where it came from. And so from there, that's what sparked the social media classes. And I was doing the podcast, I was teaching real estate, I was doing social media classes and working at a restaurant. And it looked amazing from the outside. Like, you see my Instagram, it's like, oh my goodness, John's doing so many things. He's doing so great. Wow, I'm so proud for him. But behind the scenes, and you know this, like, everything looks good when you're doing a digital business, no matter how sucky or horrible it's going on the inside. And man, did it suck. I wasn't making no money on anything. I was losing out on business from my real estate business. My podcast wasn't monetized. And my social media classes, I was teaching for free, not because I had a limiting belief that I didn't realize what a limiting belief. I said I'm just going to teach these classes as my way of giving back. And on my second class ever, I had a little over 400 people sign up for it. One of my friends, she's a millionaire agent down in Maryland. She was like, John, never do another one of these again without charging. And I was like, oh, mind you, this is live on the class in front of 180 people live on a Zoom call.
She was like,
John, drop your Venmo right now. And she's very direct. She's like, John, drop your Venmo in the chat right now. And I felt so cringe because I was like, I didn't do this to get paid. And I had a real estate coach who was like, John, you should be charging for these things. People were telling me I should be charging. But what I realized later on was I felt unworthy of receiving the money because I wasn't selling houses. It took me a while to realize that people weren't showing up to my classes to learn how to sell more houses. They were showing up to my classes because I knew something that they didn't. And that that point, it was social media. So fast forward a little bit. Now it's September of 2022. And I read this book called The Passion. I think your Passion Project. It's by Brian something. It's about your purpose. I forget what the book is. I have the book. I got to find it. It's an amazing book. And it's all about the word purpose and finding your purpose, uncovering your purpose. And from there, I was like, all right.
When Passion Meets Project by Brian Aspinall, that one?
No. It's something about, it's Brian and his wife. They had a TED Talk too.
Keep going. I tried to help you out with Google, but it's not.
So I ended up starting to think about what I wanted to do, and I started seeing ads for ClickFunnels. So I was like, all right, let me sign up for this Your First Funnel Challenge, or this, I forget what the name of the challenge was, but they were launching ClickFunnels 2.0. And so I signed up for the challenge, and in there I signed up for my
one funnel away. I think
it was one funnel away. One funnel away is the 30-day one. It was a 5-day challenge that they had. Your First Funnel Challenge, that's what it was. It was the Your First Funnel Challenge. And from there, I ended up going through it, and Mendez Media was taken. So I was like, all right, what's the next best name? Stop and Stare Media, right? Because when you create content, you need people to stop and stare, right?
I'm surprised that wasn't taken. Did you get that domain?
Yeah. StopandStare.media is my website.
.com.
No, StopandStare.media.
Oh, .media. Okay.
Yeah.
But still, that's I'm surprised anything with Stop and Stare and media is. Okay.
And so it's mine. Don't get any ideas, anyone in the chat. and that's listening. And so from there, I ended up starting Stop It There Media. And now I was going to teach these social media classes for free and then offer like content creation services. I want to start up an agency, right? And after my first client, I realized I hated creating content for people, especially because I still had to create all my own content. So that was awful. So I was like, all right, let me scrap this idea up. So now I'm at this point where like, oh my goodness, you know, I'm struggling. I'm not making any money, burning through my savings. It's about to be winter time. Restaurants super slow in the winter. So I knew I wasn't going to be making any money. And I was like, all right, let me start going on YouTube University again. And that's when I started, I found this concept called Ikigai, which I'm pretty sure you're familiar of. But for anyone that's not familiar. Like
the incremental improvement that, what was it? Was it Toyota?
Mm-mm. That's something else. But I know what you're talking about though. But Ikigai is pretty much, it stands for your reason for being, right? It's a Japanese concept. And the place where this originates from, that island has the most like centurions on the planet. Like they're known as like the land of immortals or something like that. Cause the life expectancy there is so high. And it's pretty much a four circles. It's like a Venn diagram. And it's where like what you love to do mixed with what the world needs, mixed with what you can be rewarded for, mixed with what you're good at. And when those four circles intersect, that's your Ikigai, your reason for being, your purpose, essentially. And so I found that.
I can't believe I messed that up. I was thinking of Kaizen.
Yeah.
Incremental improvement, like how Toyota took over or Honda took over like the auto industry and beat out American vehicle brands. Wrong terminology. All right. Wrong terminology. I like to be educated. Thank you for that.
And so from there, I was like, all right, let me go all in on the podcast. And so between like January and March of 2023, I got interviewed a little over 100 times on a bunch of different podcasts. And one of the guys, it was quite a bit. And then I met a guy named Jason. He had a mastermind and it was about $400 a month at that time. I'm still in the mastermind. And I was like, man, month one, I got it. No problem. But like months two, three, four, and five.
We don't know.
Man, I don't know where that money gonna come from. And I was like, well, maybe. The reason I don't have the money is because I was playing scared with my money to begin with.
Oh, it's a thought. Okay.
And so I was like, let me go all in. And so in the mastermind, he had a course on how to use ChatGPT. Now, I was already using ChatGPT to create titles for my podcast and to create show notes for my podcast. So I was already a pretty early adopter onto it. I started using it around late December of 2022. And so at that time, ChatGPT was only a month old. And so I seen his class, and his class was decent. I don't really remember much. But the one thing I do remember is at the end of it, he shows a screen recording of himself using ChatGPT to create the very same curriculum I just had him teach me in a course. And I was like, bro, no way. No way. Like, this guy has it good. He just created a whole class. I thought it was him, but it was ChatGPT the whole time. He didn't have to do any work aside from press record and create a couple slides, right? That's all he had to do. And so I was like, you know what? That's a good idea. So 2 weeks later, I ended up posting my very first ChatGPT class on how to use ChatGPT. And in there, I had ChatGPT create the presentation curriculum, like outline. I had to create the information for each slide. I use a tool called Tome.app to create the actual slides. I use Midjourney and DALL-E for the images on the presentation. And then from there, I had an Eventbrite landing page to get people to register. Still haven't found out about like landing pages and registration pages yet. So I use Eventbrite. I use a Midjourney to create the cover photo for the Eventbrite page. I use ChatGPT to create the headline, the description. I use ChatGPT to come up with the emails to get people to register and the email to get people to remind them to show up to the class live. I got a little over close to 300 people registered for that class, and it was free. At the end of it, I said, hey, I'm teaching a workshop on a Friday. This is on a Wednesday. I'm teaching a workshop on a Friday to like help go over this stuff. It's $200. I have 20 spots, and I didn't have like an offer stack or a fancy pitch like we're usually taught to do in this, you know, in this webinar space and whatever. And within 24 hours, I sold out. So I made $4,000. Hey. And I was like, whoa. I just made more money than I made in like 3 months at the restaurant doing this presentation that I had ChatGPT create. On top of that, this is also before like the National Association of Realtors and all the major media outlets found out about ChatGPT. Okay. And so I was like, whoa, no one even knows about this stuff. I got to go all in. And so that's when for me, I realized like I got to stop teaching social media stuff and go all in on the AI stuff.
Okay. All right. So we're not going any further because otherwise we're going to start to cover stuff that the next episode is going to cover. So we're just going to stop it here and say, if you want to learn about how to use ChatGPT in your business, specifically prompt engineering, because I'm going to ask you a lot about that and like be ready to share that. But specifically prompt engineering, as in you can ask ChatGPT or Claude to do something for you, but how do you make your prompt good so that the response and the outcome is even better? Be that containing your voice because you're asking it to make you a sales page or an email series, or giving it enough context so that it can like recommend an automation to you. Like, stay tuned. That episode will be airing coming up in a couple of weeks on this podcast, The Art of Online Business. And the treat before we say goodbye, because I'm going to share my screen. I'm going to go right here and share this window. The treat is that. Were you expecting that? Can you see this? I did too once have a lot of hair, though I chose to keep it in dreads, not cornrows. All right. So if you can't see the YouTube channel, that's me a long time ago with blonde tipped dreadlocks. If that's not a reason to subscribe to the YouTube channel, The Art of Online Business, so you can visually see when we're doing funnel breakdowns and see cool people like John that I'm interviewing, then I don't know of a better reason. Thanks for being here, John.
Thanks for having me. It's always a great time talking with you, man.
In the meantime, and I agree, it was a super good time talking with you. In the meantime, before somebody listens to the next episode, where can they find you online?
If you want to start leveraging ChatGPT and AI to help grow your business, you can follow me at John Mendez Official on Instagram. Start getting those tidbits, those nuggets, so that when I come on next episode and I really start dropping the gems, you already have a base knowledge as to what I'm going to be talking about. But regardless of whether you don't catch this episode and you just catch the next one, I'm going to be giving you everything you need, even if you have no experience with AI, to start leveraging in your business, because it's not about working more. It's about working smarter. And we already have tons of tools that we use as an online digital entrepreneur, right? We all have all these things and they get very complicated. I'm going to help simplify that entire process for you so you can start getting rid of all these tools and just use the only one that matters.
There we go. All right. Well, until you see me or hear from me again, be blessed and we'll see you next time. Bye.